He's the Libertarian Party candidate for vice president. This morning, we'll hear from Governor William Weld. Good morning, live from Studio 5. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross. We are always live at 9. Make sure to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes and the WJCT app. And just ahead, in a few moments, former Massachusetts Governor William Weld will join the show ahead of his town hall meeting tomorrow at Jacksonville University. Also this hour, the Monique Burr Foundation for Children, about their efforts aimed at protecting kids both on and offline. And we'll hear from the director of the Second City show, Unelectable You, all of that later on. We'll also be joined by Governor Weld in a few minutes. But first this hour, the Friends of the GTM Reserve are hosting their 7th annual Oceanwise event this Saturday. It's National Estuaries Day this weekend, too, and their mission is to protect and preserve our ocean and our estuary resources. There's a lot that goes into that. Executive Director Ellen Leroy Reed is here to tell us more. Good morning.
Good morning, Melissa.
And to our callers, what are your questions about Oceanwise and National Estuaries Day? Give us a call as we talk about how the GTM Reserve Friends are trying to protect our waterways. 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Or go online to wjctnews.org/firstcoastconnect. Email and tweet us. So we'll talk about the event in a moment. But first, let's explain who the Friends of the GTM Reserve are.
Sure, Melissa. So the Friends of the GTM Reserve is a private, nonprofit citizen support organization that supports the GTM Research Reserve, which many people have not heard of, but it is a hidden gem right here on the First Coast that runs from Ponte Vedra Beach down to Palm Coast. Many have heard of it as the Gwanna State Park, but we are now the GTM Research Reserve, and we are open to the public, and we are just encouraging more people to come out and learn about what we're doing.
And GTM stands for Gwanna?
Talamato Matanzas Reserve.
And that's a big swath of land.
It is. We have just about 74,000 acres that we cover, again, running our coastlines.
And your job, your mission is to protect those coastlines, to protect the water and the estuaries. Saturday will be National Estuaries Day. Can you explain why that is so important to this area ecologically?
Absolutely. So estuaries are home for so much life that supports humanity as well, supports our ability to live the life that we enjoy here on the First Coast. But also, our mission is related to science-based decision-making. So we have research and monitoring. We have visiting investigators that come in from around the country to study what is happening to our coastlines. Mm-hmm. So it reaches beyond just our footprint, but it also comes home locally to ensuring that we have this quality of life that we have come to know and love.
It's 549-2937 to talk about efforts to protect First Coast waterways. We hear a lot about the pollution in the St. John's River, the algae blooms and other threats to the river. We haven't heard as much about your mission, which is a little farther east along the oceanfront and the estuaries right along in those protected marshlands. Can you tell us what the picture is? What are the threats to those waterways? What are you working on?
Well, similar to the St. John's River, we are monitoring algae blooms. We actually have citizen scientists that go out and take water samples so that we're continuing to monitor the effects of what we as humans are doing to the water. But we're also doing oyster reef monitoring. You know, oysters are an incredibly valuable resource here in our community. Mm-hmm. We want to make sure that that is sustained. We do water quality testing. We do analysis of the water in both the estuaries, in the freshwater, and in the saltwater, because ultimately, it is a huge web. You know, the St. John's River is connected to the ocean. So whatever happens in one ecosystem is having an impact in another. So there mm-hmm. is that connection.
How would the estuaries be affected if the river were dredged, if the port goes ahead with its dredging project? Is that something that's on your radar or not?
That's a big question. And one of the blessings of working with the reserve is that they have relationships with the agencies, so with the Water Management District, with the Army Corps of Engineers. So they are integrated into those discussions to ensure, again, that the decisions that we are making are science-based and based on fact.
this Saturday, the night of your event is National Estuaries Day. Let's begin by explaining what an estuary is.
Well, the easiest way to explain it is where the river meets the sea. So our estuary at GTM is where the three rivers come together and then run out into the ocean. Mm-hmm. So that's the easiest way to, it's where that river meets the sea.
And why is it important to have a day for that, those bodies of water?
Well, you know, we celebrate the estuaries all year long. So anytime that you come out to the reserve, there is citizen scientist volunteer opportunities. There are water monitoring activities going on. There's programs and education. But we look at National Estuaries Day as the culmination of all of the work that we are doing throughout the year and to spread the word in an exciting, celebratory way.
Mm-hmm. But what are the threats? What are the challenges? How polluted are they?
Well, and you know, that's the thing is, what are the challenges is, one, awareness. Ensuring that the people in North Florida understand that their activities, whether it's on the north side or the west side or in downtown, ultimately do affect our oceans and our estuaries. And they are teeming with life that is important to us economically, environmentally, and culturally. So the issue really for us is awareness. We consider ourselves a hidden gem. People just mm-hmm. don't know that we are there.
Yeah. And it's good to get the word out right now. When you talk about people making small daily decisions that can have a big environmental impact, we've heard a lot about fertilizing our yards with pesticides that are river friendly, or I guess estuary friendly, mm-hmm. asking for those types of products. What are some other common sense ideas that we can all adopt?
Well, one in particular that we've spent the last few weeks talking about is microplastics. You know, that's something that most people don't know about or think about, but when we wash certain types of fabrics, there are microplastics that get into our waterways, and the wildlife consume that, and it replaces nutrients that they need, and they tend to die.
So what are we doing? It's clothes we're buying?
It depends on the type of fabric. So fabrics that have certain plastics inherent in it. So we encourage, you know, use more natural fabrics if you can.
So when you wash and dry your clothes and they have any kind of plastic applique or anything like that on them, that eventually makes its way into the groundwater.
It's very likely.
Is that what you're saying?
It is very likely.
And what else? What about plastic bags?
Well, you know, when you see photos of wildlife that is caught up in some sort of plastic bag, that's the most telling. You know, you can see the immediate impact of that. And then there is this step back that we take in the bigger picture of the impact of plastic bags in terms of going into our landfill, how the landfills then impact the water table. And again, it's that web that leads out. So it's a true picture of sustainability. We are one component of how that effort and those impacts hit our waters.
And if you're just tuning in, we're speaking with Ellen Leroy Reed of Friends of the GTM Reserve about National Estuaries Day at 549-2937. The Guana, as a lot of people call it, is a stretch along the coastline that over the years many developers would have loved to get their hands on. It remains just a wild place.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us a little bit more about that piece of land.
Well, it's stunning to see, and it is incredibly diverse. And when you ask the people that live in that region or nearby that region, the wildness is part of the reason why they live there. And if it was developed and if it disappeared, you would lose that connection to the natural land, in addition to the environmental and long-term impacts of that decision.
You can put in there, there's a boat slip. What else do people see when they go out there?
Well, and I think that is the one point that we really want to share with the community is when you drive down A1A, you see this wild, beautiful area, but behind those walls, you see we have boat slips, we have kayaking, we have beautiful trails that you can walk. You can bring, you know, your horses out there and mm-hmm. walk the trails. You can bring your dogs as long as they're on a leash and walk those trails. So, and then in addition to that, you can get your hands dirty and your feet wet and become a citizen scientist. You can get in the water and do seining. You can mm-hmm. do phytoplankton monitoring. So in addition to just the recreational component, there's that learning component as well.
And they can visit you.
Absolutely. Come by anytime.
And where is the Friends of the GTM Reserve located?
Our offices are in the Environmental Education Center at the GTM Research Reserve. So if you go to 450 Guana Lake Road in Ponte Vedra, we are right there and our doors are always open.
549-2937. Marcia is on the south side. Hi, Marcia. Good morning.
Oh, hi. Hi. Hello. I didn't expect to go on the air, but that's fine.
No, you are ready to go.
Okay. I just wanted to know how to dispose of my prescription drugs. I have tried to turn leftovers, or if my doctor changes my prescription to something and I've got some leftover, I've tried to turn them into pharmacists, but they won't take them. And I don't want to put them down the sink or flush them down the toilet. So what's the responsible way of dealing with those?
Interesting question. Thanks, Marcia.
Well, that is a wonderful point, is anything that you put down the drain will eventually hit our waterways. So thank you for being cognizant of that, first of all. Second, there are other nonprofits that collect those prescriptions that will then, in some cases, redistribute those to the needy or dispose of them properly. My recommendation, instead of endorsing one over the other, is do a Google search for nonprofits prescription drug disposal, mm-hmm. and you should come up. The second one, if you go to your local hospital, they tend to have relationships with those organizations as well. They may be able to point you in the right direction.
Here's an email for you. I hope and trust that the GTM Friends will reach out to more local politicians who could use the science-based knowledge to make decisions that impact current and future generations of Floridians. What about the politics of water pollution in Florida?
Well, one of the reasons why we are so proud to be friends of the GTM Research Reserve is that they advocate for the waterways, but only as it relates to the actual science. Mm-hmm. So our researchers and our staff, they don't walk in and say, you should do this. It's, here's the science. Here's the monitoring. Here's the research that we have done. Mm-hmm. Here are the trends. Now, based on that, you have the knowledge to make the right decisions.
What would be the best decisions in your view for this region that would make your job easier?
To make my job easier, I don't know if it comes back to decisions that are being made, because if the right decisions are being made, the estuary will be a sustainable resource for our community. What would make my job easier is if more people in the Jacksonville area embrace the fact that the GTM Reserve belongs to them as well. Come out and see it. Understand what our investigators are trying to accomplish and make it something that is important to you as well as the people who just live in the backyard.
They can come out Saturday, meanwhile, for the 7th annual Oceanwise, an evening for the estuaries. This is at your center in Ponte Vedra. What's on the agenda?
It is going to be a fun and casual evening. We are kicking things off at 6 o'clock on the 24th. We will have a silent auction with some really amazing items. We are auctioning off a membership to the Serenata Beach Club. We have a Hobie Mirage Tandem Island Kayak that we are auctioning off. And then some other items related to our mission. We have music. We have sustainably sourced food. We will have, of course, libations. And we will hold the event right on the Guana River as the sun is setting. Dress casual. Come for fun. Tickets are $50. We would love to see you there.
And the website
is www.gtmnerr.org.
She is Executive Director Ellen Leroy Reed. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you so much, Melissa.
Much more still ahead in a moment. We're expecting a call from Libertarian Vice Presidential Candidate Governor William Weld as he visits Jacksonville. Keep listening.
Hendricks Avenue Baptist Church is a place to experience Christ's presence and God's Spirit in a vibrant faith community. HAB celebrates diversity, seeks to bridge differences, and journeys together in an honest and authentic search for truth. HABchurch.com. Find a different way of being Baptist.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, antibiotic resistance kills 700,000 people a year worldwide. For the first time, the UN General Assembly is considering taking action, the rise of superbugs and what to do about it.
At 10 o'clock on 89.9 WJZT, your community, your world.
Do you have music you want people to hear? Do you have an artistic vision you want to share? Then join these winners in the Square. The Square is an online venue where artists share their work with the community and compete for a chance to be featured on WJCT-TV and radio. Submit your work now through September 30th. To learn more about The Square and to submit your work, visit wjct.org/thesquare.
Not many pieces can match this one for romantic drama and sheer virtuosity. It's the Piano Concerto No. 1 by Tchaikovsky. Coming up, Joyce Young at the piano with a thrilling performance in concert alongside the Nashville Symphony on the next Performance Today from APM. Weeknights at 7 on 89.9 WJCT.
Welcome back. Well, he was the Republican governor of Massachusetts in the 1990s for 6 years and has a long history of public service. But now William Weld has left the GOP to run as vice president on the Libertarian Party ticket with Gary Johnson. Governor Weld will be in Jacksonville tomorrow night for a town hall forum at Jacksonville University. He's on the line now with a preview. Governor Weld, a pleasure. Thanks for being with
us. Hey, Melissa. Thanks for having me. My pleasure.
And the number to join Governor Weld, the vice presidential Libertarian candidate for president, is 549-2937. Lots to ask you about. First off, I need to get you on the record. The other day, Watergate investigative journalist Carl Bernstein tweeted out, Bill Weld could be a hero instead of a nader if he renounces his Libertarian candidacy and campaigns and endorses Hillary Rodham Clinton. Are you planning to drop out of the race?
No, I'll tell you, somebody at Clinton headquarters blew a whistle or something, because I got 24 emails that day from people I didn't know saying, Weld, unless you renounce your candidacy right now, you're going to be a pariah. Your name will be a hissing and a byword. You'll go down in history as the worst guy who ever lived. People I didn't know. And then some from people I did know, liberal Democratic friends of mine in New York, but, getting dozens of them on the same day, I had to think it was kind of orchestrated. No, that is not the plan. The plan is to get around the country and get better known. Only about 30% of the country knows who Gary and I are, and Gary's still in the two most recent polls, polling at about 13%. So we're hoping we can get over that 15% bar that the commission has erected to participation in the debates, and we'll be in debates 2 and 3, and then people will know us better, and we think we have a shot at running the table and winning the whole thing if people know that we're the ones who are fiscally responsible and socially liberal or inclusive, and that doesn't really describe either other party. So we really are the alternative.
You've described your platform as having a range of policies, as you said, that appeal to voters in different buckets. You've said your first order of business you and Governor Johnson would have if you went to the White House is filing a balanced budget within your first 100 days.
Right.
How is that doable?
You got to do it the way we did it in our states. And both of us are two-term governors of Democratic states. We ran and were elected as Republicans twice. And the first thing we did was to wrestle the budget to the ground. I cut spending in real dollars. We'd been spending too much money. And when you have an unbalanced budget, you go into debt, you spend too much money, and you raise taxes, the employer community loses confidence, and they won't add people. They won't hire new people. So it gets to be sort of a vicious spiral. Like when I came in, we had the highest unemployment rate among the 11 industrialized states, and at the end of my first term, we had the lowest. So The budget really is, it's not glamorous, but it is the first order of business, and you just have to look at every account in the budget and see how it performed last year. If it had great results, like a preventive health program that, you know, had tremendous outcomes and saved a lot of costs, you might want to multiply that appropriation by 10 and, you know, some other bigger appropriation that created a bureaucracy that nobody can quite tell you what the bureaucracy does. That might go to zero. And that's how you get the savings. It's not, you know, what people always say is, oh, I'm going to attack waste, fraud, and abuse. No. What you attack is the unnecessary programs that shouldn't be there in the first place because they're not really serving an important function. That's how you get the savings to balance the budget in a place like Washington that's so out of whack.
Your running mate, a Libertarian presidential candidate, Gary Johnson, was criticized recently when he asked, what is Aleppo, referring to the conflict in Syria? What would you say to those who are concerned your ticket just doesn't have the foreign policy chops to assume the White House?
Well, first of all, on Gary and Aleppo, he didn't know what Mike Barnicle was talking about. He didn't know he was even talking about a place. So he said, what is Aleppo, not where is Aleppo? Mm-hmm. So that was a misunderstanding. But he knows a lot about Syria and had been, you know, holding forth about it even before that. So I think that was just an unfortunate misunderstanding, mistake. You know, I get around the world a lot, both for client business, and I'm a member of a group called the Interaction Council, which is former heads of state. Jean Chrétien, who was the Prime Minister of Canada for 10 years, got me in, and Franz Braninsky, who is the Chancellor in Austria. And it has old pals of mine like Bertie Ahern, who is the Taoiseach, the Prime Minister in Ireland, and former President Obasanjo of Nigeria is a big factor there. Former President Mkapa of Tanzania, Jim Bolger, who is the Prime Minister of New Zealand, is active. But so I have saturation foreign policy exposure for the last mm-hmm. dozen years.
And then that begs the question, Governor, what would you say to those who feel you should be at the top of the ticket rather than,
you know,
Governor Johnson?
I hear that a lot in Massachusetts New York from people who've known me for 20 years and never heard of Gary Johnson. But somehow when we get west of the Mississippi River, I don't hear that too much. And the guy who gets mobbed in the airports there is not me. It's Gary Johnson. So I think it's a function of, you know, we got one real Easterner, that's me, and one real Westerner, and that's Gary. I think that's the strength of the ticket. I mean, I can't figure out whether I like better, you know, doing rallies together with Gary or when we split up and get twice as much coverage.
Huh.
But it's been a real pleasure running with him. We served together in the 90s. My second term was his first term. So this isn't like a serendipitous coming together. We were big fans of each other back almost 20 years ago.
Now, let me ask you a little bit about your domestic platform on the Libertarian ticket.
Sure.
You and Governor Johnson call for repealing the income tax and abolishing the IRS. How would America make up that revenue, and how would you get that through Congress?
Well, you get it through Congress if people focused on the fact that if you remove the corporate and personal income tax, you wouldn't need the IRS, so you half the three-quarters of the Washington lobbyists would disappear. It would just be a much simplified system. It's kind of breathtaking, I know, in concept, but it's not a new idea. It's been filed in Congress for each of the last 10 years. It has about 80 sponsors in Congress, so this is not an idea that Gary and I made up in a garage. And I've for a long time been for radical simplification of our tax system. I'm a big fan of the flat tax idea that was championed by Steve Forbes when he ran for president twice. And that's you eliminate all the deductions. Unfortunately, all of them have to go. But then the tax rate goes to 17 or 19%. And the tax code shrinks to, you know, a tiny fraction of what it is now. I think that would be good. People could plan on it. I think that would help the employment picture. The so-called fair tax, the one that involves repeal of the IRS, and the flat tax does not involve that. That substitutes a national consumption tax. So you pay based on the amount of stuff you consume. The criticism of that is it's regressive, and the answer to that criticism is people at the lower economic rungs in terms of their income get what's called a prebate, like a rebate, except it's in advance to help them. It's like a subsidy, help them with that tax. But it's so it's essentially a sales tax. I think it needs to be, you know, vetted and discussed. I've never been a big fan of the European value-added tax, which is the sales tax, because it applies at every step of the way, so it's kind of hidden. And by the time you buy the good, you don't realize that you've paid the VAT six times. As I understand it, this one, you know, you'd just be paying once on the finished, the cost of the finished product. So it could be better than the European system.
Let me ask you as well, Governor, just since we have limited time with you, you've talked about your platform as fiscally conservative, fiscally conservative and more socially liberal or more socially inclusive. And you've also said that however this election goes, you foresee more schisms in the Republican Party, people that align with Donald Trump's vision of the world and people that align more with your party's, your ticket's vision of the world. You've also said you consider Donald Trump unfit, unqualified to be president, but that you also do not support Hillary Clinton's worldview in any way.
No, I didn't say that. I said she's off on the fiscal policy.
Okay. What would you say to those on either side, Republicans or Democrats, who see your candidacy as splitting the vote enough that the candidate that they don't like has an opening to win and become president?
Well, that's what the dyed-in-the-wool Republicans and the dyed-in-the-wool Democrats say. They said you have to vote for us. Any vote for anybody else is a vote for the hated Trump or the hated Clinton. They're just assuming their conclusion. They're assuming that you cannot have an alternative to the R and the D monopoly. I don't think they've done such a great job with their monopoly in Washington the last 15 years, frankly. You know, it's poisonously partisan down there, hard to get anything done. And it's like the two parties in Washington exist with very little other thought than to kill each other. And now there's two, you know, the R campaign and the D campaign. Most of what they're talking about is they're trying to kill the other campaign. So that's not particularly appealing in terms of forging public policy that's going to benefit the people of the United States. So, you know, Gary and I have no agenda other than to make the people of the United States happier, more prosperous, and above all, freer and with greater personal liberty than they have now. We want less government. We don't want the government in your pocketbook. We don't want the government in your bedroom. And we think that's the American way, and we've kind of, you know, lost sight of that. So we're very pleased to put our platform forward. One other thing I might mention is we think we've been too aggressive the last 20 years in terms of wars, offensive, aggressive wars launched by the United States when we see something in another country we don't like, so-called regime change like in Iraq and Libya and Syria. So we think we've been too far in the direction of boots on the ground abroad and spilling American blood on foreign soil. So we'd be more restrained there.
And I'm going to, if I may, I'm just going to put a few callers on the line for you that have been holding. And we're speaking right now with Governor William Weld, former governor of Massachusetts. He's the Libertarian vice presidential candidate. He'll speak at a town hall tomorrow night on the JU campus. Jeff is in St. Augustine. Hey, Jeff, good morning.
Hey, good morning. I guess the one question I had was that in a country that spends, you know, let's say half our money on defense and almost the other half on Social Security and Medicaid or Medicare, in a county like St. John's, which is probably, you know, almost entirely dependent on Medicare and Social Security payments, do you have a plan to, like, phase out Social Security where people, say, over 80 would still be taken care of, but people between, say, 55 and 80 would get some type of a graduated lump sum payout? Because, Romney had a thing where, you know, he was going to change the whole system, but then he kind of turned around to buy votes to say, if you're over 55.
So, Jeff, you want to know his plan for entitlements, right? His plan for
entitlements? Yeah, I get it.
Go ahead, Governor Weld.
I get it. So both the Clinton and Trump have said we're not going to touch entitlements, which just shows they're not serious about attacking the debt and deficit problem. No, I think on Social Security, for example, I think a means test would be fair. It's been viciously resisted in the past, but somebody with plenty of money, even if not too much money, I don't need Social Security. I know a lot of people who don't need Social Security and wouldn't miss it. So I've never understood why people who are billionaires are getting Social Security. And we have to take steps like that to preserve the system, or it's absolutely not going to be there for the millennials. They are not going to have Social Security. They're going to have huge debt from education. It's just not fair to the next generation. The other entitlements, Medicaid, I think we could block grant back to the states in terms of health care in general. Gary and I think there could be enormous savings by introducing more competition, health savings accounts. So there are things that require political will to do. But I think Governor Johnson and I both showed that we have political will to change things when we came into office. So that's what we would do in D.C. But the end game is not to phase anything out. It's to save the programs, which otherwise won't be there.
Okay. Paul in Orange Park. Go ahead, Paul.
Yes. I'm calling in to agree strongly with the ceasing of starting all these ridiculous wars. We're still in Afghanistan, still in Iraq.
Yeah.
And we're fighting a proxy war with Russia in Syria, which is extremely dangerous.
Well, you know, Paul, there's a question on the table right now. Should the 8,400 troops in Afghanistan come home? And everyone's saying, oh, no, we have to leave them there for another 20 years because if they come home, then the people who have been helping us in Afghanistan will all be lined up and shot. So we'd have to give them asylum. Well, the answer to that is you'd have to do that in 20 years if the troops stayed there for 20 more years. They're not fighting a war there. They're just sitting there. Mm. So, you know, if you have to give people asylum who helped you fight the Taliban, do that now. You know, get the top 200 people, bring them to the United States, say thank you very much.
Governor Weld, both Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton have called for increased airstrikes in Syria, for example. How does the Johnson-Weld ticket approach that aspect of your foreign policy?
We think that's nuts. Look what we did in Syria. And you know, Mrs. Clinton's fingerprints are all over the Syria and Libya situation. We go in, we arm the rebels who are aligned with ISIS-type elements who are also against Assad. The rebels are defeated, so their arms fall into the hands of ISIS. That's not really what we had in mind when we went in there. It's incredibly complex, all the different rebel groups and Nusra and ISIS and, you know, the Kurds are there and the Turks don't like the Kurds. So it's a complete mess. And putting more air power in there is just not something we think is a good idea.
How do, then, we deal with that situation? What would be your approach?
Well, it's a very difficult one because you do have to deal with the Russians, and they're not the most reliable counterparties in the world. Now, Secretary Kerry does have a good relationship with Foreign Minister Lavrov, and he dealt with him a lot on Iran, and so they've got this ceasefire, which from hour to hour is either blowing up or not blowing up. You have the unfortunate situation where the U.S. killed 60 Syrian soldiers, so we've got blood on our hands. And then the aid convoy was bombed, and the U.S. says that's Russia, and Russia says it's not. So it's not a good couple of days, obviously, over there. But I agree with Governor Johnson that the resolution has to involve Russia taking some action. And, you know, we got to persuade the Russians that it's in their interests. Probably the position of the Assad regime is going to be part of the solution, but it's not something anybody wants to think about.
Well, it's certainly very gratifying to be granted this access to speak with you. It's a small preview of a town hall that you can come out to tomorrow night as Libertarian VP candidate Bill Weld, former governor of Massachusetts, speaks. That's at JU's Davis College of Business on University Boulevard, kicking off at 7:30 p.m. Governor William Weld, thank you so much for calling into the show.
Thank you, Melissa. See all you folks who are listening tomorrow, I hope. Town Hall, 7:30. Thanks.
Alrighty. And much more still to come. We'll be back in a moment.
When Larry came home to Alaska from Iraq, he relied on the VA.
VA kind of made this promise that, you know, they're going to take care of me.
And they did, until Congress tried to reform it.
With this new program, if it's working somewhere, I don't know where, but it's definitely not working here. It's probably the worst thing that's happened to veterans' health care in Alaska.
On the next Reveal.
Thursday at 1 on 89.9 WJCT.
Welcome back. Well, it's an important tool to learn about everything from cyberbullying to other strategies to keep your kids safe in the digital world we're all living in. The Monique Burr Foundation for Children is hosting the first annual Real World Safety Conference. Program Director Stacy Pendarvis is here to tell us about it. And Stacy, this is keeping kids safe both on and offline, which we're all, as parents, concerned about. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me this morning.
This is coming up Saturday, October 1st. What is going to be discussed?
So we have four world-renowned speakers, authors, founders of nonprofits that have worked really hard to protect kids. And they have important information for parents and kids, if the parents would like to bring their kids, about bullying, cyberbullying, and digital safety.
This is something so many moms and dads are very worried about. How can we learn from this? What are some of the best practices, I guess, that we'll learn about at this event?
So very true statement that a lot of parents are worried about this. If you think about it, there's not too many things that our children know better than we do. But with technology, it's true. And one in three teenagers now considers their technology more important or as important to their life as food, air, shelter, and water.
Sure.
So, but how many of us parents have to hand our phones to our teenagers to say, here, I can't make this work. How do I do this? Mm-hmm. And what we really need to do is educate and empower parents with rules and strategies that they can use to protect their children. And so each of these speakers is going to talk about a different topic.
Now, this is coming up Saturday, October 1st at UNF. In the meantime, the Monique Burr Foundation is really expanding because October is National Bullying Prevention Month. You're going to be sending out a lesson plan on bullying prevention to every public elementary school in the state.
Correct. So, you know, the program has really grown, Melissa. We last year reached over 400,000 students, and we have about 2,200 facilitators trained implementing this program around the state. And the program covers everything from bullying to child abuse to exploitation. But we want to make sure that we're reaching all kids during this upcoming month of bullying prevention. So we mm-hmm. are sending a lesson plan to every elementary school in the state of Florida that will help teachers prepare to educate students on how to prevent bullying.
Which is something, obviously, I think schools have come a long way, but it's still a problem.
It is. A lot of times, I think they just don't know what to do with the situation. And our goal is to not only teach them what to do in response to bullying, but to help them educate students to actually prevent bullying.
In the meantime, register now for the first ever Real World Safety Conference.
Yes.
This is at UNF, Saturday, October 1st.
And the Wednesday prior to the Real World Safety Conference, Aaron Marin, the force behind Aaron's Law, will also be in town. We're hosting a Champion for Child Safety luncheon.
That's excellent. And the website is mbchildsafetymatters.org. Stacy Pendarvis, Program Director with the Monique Burr Foundation. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
More in a moment.
WJCT is a community-supported station, and your contribution helps programs like our radio reading service for those who are visually impaired or have difficulty handling printed materials. If you'd like to specifically help radio reading, denote that on your check and send it to us at WJCT 100 Festival Park Avenue, Jacksonville, Florida, 32202. And thanks for helping us give voice to the printed word.
I'm David Luckin, host of the Electro Lounge, inviting you to join me and other staff members for a free thank you concert at Unity Plaza this Friday night, September 23rd, 7 to 10 p.m., live radio and five of our favorite local bands. Friday at 7 at Unity Plaza.
Welcome back. Well, they are one of the oldest churches in Jacksonville. And this month, St. John the Divine Greek Orthodox is celebrating 100 years in the city with a big Greek celebration. Father Nick Lowe and parishioner Maria Chrysovergis are here to tell us all about it. Can I say Opa? Will there be some kind of party in addition to all the worshiping? Very exciting. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning, Melissa.
Father Lowe, the St. John the Divine Greek Orthodox Church is older than just about any church in town, which I did not know, 100 years.
It's truly extraordinary when you just think about that. In the early 1900s, there were Greeks coming from Greece who just yearned to have a better life, yearning for the American dream, and brought their culture, their faith, and they started up here in Jacksonville, and they did an extraordinary job in 1916, and we are now benefiting from the fruits of their labor.
So, Maria, what is going to be happening? Because in addition to the festivities, you're bringing in some major clergymen from the Greek Orthodox denomination.
Right.
Is that right?
You were just talking about a party. I love Father Nick was just saying, it's like a four-day wedding.
It's like my big fat Greek wedding.
Over
but even
and
bigger.
Over. Right. I've been explaining to our non-Orthodox friends that our Archbishop from New York, who doesn't really come to our church, I don't know. Has he been here, Father?
He's been here, but it's been some time.
Yeah. He's kind of like the Pope, let's say, in the Catholic Church. I mean, this is a really big deal. And so he will be traveling down from New York, and our sweet children are going to greet him at the airport in their Greek custom costumes.
And then he will be
blessing our ground because we're building a new church on Beach Boulevard. And so that's going to be very exciting. We're going to be literally laying a cornerstone in the ground, and he'll be a part of that, that moment. And then he'll be celebrating the Divine Liturgy with us on Sunday with other services in between.
Absolutely, yes.
And the new church, I've driven by that spot on Beach Boulevard many times. So you're growing. You need a new space.
You know, Melissa, we're really excited about this because our church, you know, the Greek Orthodox community here in Jacksonville has been growing. We're the oldest of the third oldest Orthodox church in the state of Florida. Mm-hmm. And to see our church now coming to a point where just due to size that we've experienced a 40% growth over the last, 10 years has really allowed us, thankfully, to look at new property and look at new opportunities that we have to kind of share God's message, but also to kind of impact our city.
And it's really incredible because, I've been the choir director at our church for about 10 years, but I've grown up in this church for almost 20 years. And it's sort of where I feel like we're a little bit of an anomaly. Growing up in a Greek church, if you didn't have Opolis at the end of your last name, you probably weren't in our church. Everybody was Greek. And thanks to Father Nick and his amazing sermons and just the warmth and hospitality of this church, as a choir director, I look up in my choir and I see the United Nations. We have African American people singing in our choir. We have Asian people singing in our choir. It's not just a church for Greeks anymore. And so that is part of what has led us to Beach Boulevard. We need more space. Mm-hmm. Our Sunday school classrooms are like, busting at the seams. And so we need a bigger church. And it's just so exciting to see it, finally coming to fruition.
Can I bring a bottle of Windex and clean your new church?
Our stained glass windows would really appreciate
yes,
that.
I just always think of that bit in the movie. Okay, so with all of that said, there's a lot that's going to be happening, 4 days worth of fun. How can people join in on all this?
Well, we would like to invite everyone on Saturday at around 11:30 at our Beach Boulevard property, our new property. We're opening up, we're actually having the groundbreaking celebration. Everyone's able, and if they're free, to come out there and just be part of that celebration. It's going to be extraordinary. We also on Saturday night have a banquet held at the Prime Osborne. I think, if I'm not mistaken, that the event might already be sold out. But you can, inquire, you can contact our church, and we can let you know about that. And then Sunday, if people are interested, they can just go to our website. You can actually watch part of the service streaming live on our website at saintonthedivine.com, and then services Sunday night and then Monday. We're really excited, too, that in addition to our Archbishop being here, that the outgoing or the 2016 Miss America, Betty Cantrell, is going to be our keynote, our featured speaker, at
least
on Saturday night. She's a devout Orthodox Christian and loves, really grace us with her presence this Saturday night. So that'll be at Prime Osborne.
Lots happening. Congratulations.
Thank you, Melissa.
Thank you so much.
Exciting weekend for you as St. John the Divine Greek Orthodox celebrates 100 years in Jacksonville with Father Niccolo. And I did not know you were the choir director, Maria Chrissa Virgis. You can also catch her on the chat.
That's right.
Thanks for being here.
Thank you, my friend.
Well, finally, this hour in this new political era of viral gaffes and social media campaigning, who even knows what makes a presidential candidate electable anymore? Join Slate Magazine and Second City Friday night at Florida Theater for an evening of comedy, insight, and topical musings. It's all called Unelectable You. Director Matt Hovde is on the line now to tell us about it. And, gee, you picked the right year to do this, Matt. Good morning.
Hi, good morning. Yeah, we timed this pretty well, didn't we? We've been waiting 40 years for an election like this to put this show together.
So what are we going to see? Tell us a little bit about, I'm assuming, a lot of Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton skits, but what's on the what's going to be on stage?
Yeah, you're right, because what we're trying to do with this show is kind of capture a little bit about what's driving this election, because these are two of the least popular presidential candidates we've ever seen. And part of our comedian's job is to kind of reflect on those kinds of theses. So we're trying to do that with this show and capture a little bit about why we're so frustrated with these two candidates.
Second City is always, I used to live in Chicago. Some of the greatest comics in the country have come out of Second City. Is the whole show improv, or have you rehearsed some pre-done skits? How are you putting it all together?
The majority of the show is pre-written sketches that we've developed over the last few weeks, tied into current events that are happening in this election. But there is a decent amount of the show that is being improvised every night. We take suggestions from the audience, and we're also, with this particular show, partnering with Slate.com to use current events from their headline to inspire our improvisation as well. So every show, we bring on someone from Slate to sort of talk to us about the latest happenings, and then the cast improvises off of those happenings.
Nice. Now, you call this show Unelectable You. Are you trying to make a comment about these candidates that you don't think either one of them is electable?
Yeah, because one of the fascinating things about these people, these candidates, are they each have very definable flaws that in previous elections might have ruled them out as possible candidates. But for whatever reason, in this day and age, they have enough support to sort of keep moving forward in the race. So we're trying to kind of figure out why that would be. And part of the Unelectable You title is sort of reflecting that, you know, we're all flawed in some way, and we're all vulnerable, and we're all human. So how could any of us actually succeed in that job? That's part of the fun that we're having, too.
And do you have cast members who can do Donald Trump, do Hillary Clinton, do Gary Johnson, or whoever else you want to impersonate? Are you doing those types of skits? Like what we see
sure
on
are.
SNL?
Oh, absolutely. This is a terrific cast. It's really an all-star group that's coming to this show for us. We have a guy that does a great Obama. We have a real fun monologue in which Obama gives a speech that he wishes he could give, but he really can't. We have a terrific actor who does Hillary Clinton. We do a whole long musical song about Hillary and all of the things that are criticizable about her and how she views herself differently than maybe the rest of the public does. So you will be seeing appearances by all of these candidates for sure.
It sounds like a lot of fun. Thanks for joining us, and enjoy your time down here in Florida. Thanks for being with us.
Can't wait. So excited. Thank you so much, Melissa.
He's Director Matt Hovde of Second City Chicago. Friday night at Florida Theater, it's Unelectable You. Get your tickets at floridatheater.com. And that's our show today. Thanks to all of our guests and callers. Our producer is Kevin Mershart. Michelle Corum runs the board. The show theme, composed and performed by the Jacksonville Symphony's Pyotr Chevchik. Never miss a show. Make sure to subscribe to our podcast on iTunes and the WJCT app. And next on Diane Rehm, antibiotic resistance kills 700,000 people every year. For the first time, the UN General Assembly is considering taking action. The rise of superbugs and what to do about them, that's next. I'm Melissa Ross, and you're listening to First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT FM Jacksonville. Your community, your world. We'll be right back here again at 9 a.m. tomorrow. Have a great day.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.